and this is VOA One The Hit.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, we will hear stories from Katie Weaver and Ashley Thompson and John Russell. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about America's 29th president, Warren G. Harding. But first, an Iranian official Monday denied that Iran was involved in the attack on writer Salman Rushdie. However, the official sought to justify the attack in the country's first public comments on the incident. The statement came from Nasser Kanani, the spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry. The comments came 3 days after Rushdie was stabbed several times during a talk in the U.S. state of New York. The attack left him seriously injured. Rushdie's business agent said Sunday that the writer is on the road to recovery and was no longer on a breathing machine. Rushdie is 75 years old. He suffered damage to his liver. Nerves in an arm and in one of his eyes were cut. He is likely to lose the eye, his agent said. He remains in serious condition. Though his life-changing injuries are severe, his usual sense of humor remains intact, Rushdie's son, Zafar Rushdie, said in a Sunday statement. Rushdie has faced death threats for more than 30 years over his book, The Satanic Verses. Muslim leaders considered the representation of the Prophet Muhammad in the book to be blasphemous. In 1989, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, issued a fatwa, or Islamic ruling, demanding the writer's death. While Iran has not paid attention to Rushdie in recent years, the fatwa still stands. Also, a partly official Iranian organization had offered over $3 million for the killing of the writer. It has not commented on the attack. Regarding the attack against Salman Rushdie in America, we don't consider anyone deserving reproach, blame, or even condemnation, except for Rushdie himself and his supporters, Kanani said. He added, "No one can blame the Islamic Republic of Iran." Iran has denied carrying out other attacks in foreign countries against political opponents in the years since the country's 1979 Islamic Revolution. But investigators and Western governments have blamed such attacks on Iran. Rushdie was attacked Friday as he was about to give a talk in New York State. His accused attacker was 24-year-old Hadi Matar. He told a court he was not guilty of the attempted murder and attack. Police in New York have offered no reason for the attack, but District Attorney Jason Schmidt noted the promised payment for an attack on Rushdie. He argued against bail during a hearing for the suspect over the weekend. Matar was born in the U.S. to immigrant parents from a small town in southern Lebanon near the Israel border. Flags of the Iranian-backed Shiite militant group Hezbollah hang across the town. There are also pictures of Hezbollah and Iranian leaders there. Village records show Matar holds Lebanese citizenship and is a Shiite Muslim, an official there said. The official said Matar's father lives there, but has been in hiding since the attack. In his remarks Monday, Kanani added that Iran does not have any other information more than what the American media has reported. He also suggested that Rushdie brought the attack on himself. Fatwas can be cancelled, but Iran's current supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who took over after Khomeini's death, has never done so.
For most teenage girls in Afghanistan, it has been a year since they were barred from going to school. But some are trying to continue their education, even with the Taliban now ruling the country. At a house in Kabul, a group of young girls recently gathered for classes in an unofficial school set up by Sodaba Nazan. She and her sister teach English, science, and math to girls who should be in high school. When the Taliban wanted to take away the rights of education and the rights of work from women, I wanted to stand against their decision by teaching these girls, Nazan told the Associated Press. Hers is one of several secret schools in operation since the Taliban took over the country and restricted education for girls. The government only permits girls to attend school through the sixth grade. They are barred from attending high school. Although the Taliban says women can attend university, it is not likely that they will do so if they cannot complete high school. Nearly the whole population of Afghanistan was thrown into poverty after the Taliban takeover in August of 2021. Millions of Afghans could not feed their families when the world cut off support to the country. The group Save the Children found that more than 45% of girls are not going to school in Afghanistan, compared to 20% of boys. It also found that 26% of girls are showing signs of depression, compared with 16% of boys. The international community is demanding that the Taliban open schools to all Afghan girls. The United States and the European Union have created plans to pay Afghanistan's teachers directly to keep the schools open without putting money in the Taliban's hands. But Taliban leaders are still arguing among themselves about whether to educate girls. Some in the group support returning girls to school, because they see no religious objection to it, or because they want to improve ties with the world. Others strongly oppose it, especially rural tribal leaders. When the Taliban first ruled Afghanistan in the 1990s, the group established much stronger restrictions on women. The Taliban promised Afghans when they seized control again last year that they would not return to the restrictions of the past. The officials said they would permit teen girls back into school in the future. But they said first the government needed to set up a process to separate boys and girls in an Islamic framework. In March, just before the new school year was to begin, the Taliban announced that everyone would be back to school. But then, on March 23rd, the day schools were to reopen, the group stopped teenage girls from going to school. Apparently, the Taliban's supreme leader, Mullah Habibullah Akhundzada, changed the policy to please more conservative local leaders. Shaikiba Kadiri, a 16-year-old, remembered going to school that day, ready to start the 10th grade. She and her friends were excited until a teacher told them to go home. "The girls all began to cry," she said. "That was the worst moment in our lives." Since then, she has been trying to study at home by reading books. And she is learning English through movies and YouTube videos. Her older sister is at a private university studying law. But her father, Mohammed Shakadiri, said she won't have a job. The Taliban won't permit her to work. Kadiri said he has always wanted his children to get a higher education. As that may be impossible now, he is thinking of leaving Afghanistan for the first time after many years of war. "I can't see them growing in front of my eyes with no education. It is just not acceptable to me," he said. A month after the Taliban takeover, Nazan started teaching street children to read in a park in her neighborhood. Women who could not read or write joined them, she said. Sometime later, a supporter rented a house in which Nazan could hold the classes. Once she was operating inside, Nazan included teen girls who were no longer permitted to go to public school. Now, there are about 250 students, including 50 or 60 schoolgirls, studying above the sixth grade level. Nazan's school, and others like it, are illegal under the Taliban's current restrictions. But so far, her school remains open. For students, the secret schools are a lifeline. "It is so hard when you can't go to school," said student Dunya Arbabzada. "Whenever I pass by my school and see the closed door, it's so upsetting for me." I'm Katie Weaver.
New research suggests that even a simple exercise program might help older people with light or mild memory problems. Doctors have long advised patients to do physical activity to help keep their brains healthy. But the U.S. government-supported research marks the longest study of whether exercise makes any difference once memory starts to decline.
Researchers found around 300 inactive older adults with memory changes called mild cognitive impairment, MCI. MCI is a condition that sometimes comes before Alzheimer's disease. Half of the older adults did aerobic exercises, and the rest did stretching and balance movements that raised their heart rates a little. People in both groups got attention from trainers who worked with them at youth organization centers called YMCAs around the United States. When COVID-19 shut down gyms, the trainers helped the study participants keep moving at home by video calls. After a year, testing of mental activity showed neither group had worsened, said lead researcher Laura Baker of Wake Forest School of Medicine in the state of North Carolina. Brain scans did not show the shrinkage that often goes with worsening memory problems, she said. By comparison, similar MCI patients in another long-term study of brain health, but without exercise, experienced cognitive or mental decline over a year. The early findings are surprising, but the National Institute on Aging cautioned that tracking non-exercisers in the same study would have offered better evidence.
The results suggest this is doable for everybody, not just seniors healthy enough to work up a hard sweat, said Baker. She presented the data recently at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference. Exercise needs to be part of the prevention strategies for at-risk seniors, she added. Maria Carrillo is the Alzheimer's Association Chief Scientific Officer. She said earlier research has found regular physical activity of any kind may reduce damaging inflammation and increase blood flow to the brain. She added that the new study is especially interesting because the COVID-19 pandemic began halfway through the study. That meant the study participants became socially isolated or separated from others. Social isolation has long been known to increase people's risk of memory problems, Carrillo said.
It is a difficult time for dementia research. Doctors are not sure about prescribing a high-priced new drug called Aduhelm. The drug is supposed to be the first to slow the progression of Alzheimer's, but it is not yet clear if it really helps patients. Researchers last month reported another drug that works similarly failed in an important study. It, too, targets amyloid plaques in the brain. There is growing urgency to find whether exercise and other steps might offer at least some protection. How much and what kind of exercise? In Baker's study, seniors were supposed to get moving for 30 to 45 minutes 4 times a week. It did not matter whether it was exercise on the treadmill device or stretching exercises. Baker believes the social connection with the trainers helped. Each participant completed over 100 hours of exercise. We wouldn't have done the exercise on our own, said Doug Maxwell of Verona, Wisconsin, who joined the study with his wife. The husband and wife, both 81, were assigned to the stretching classes. They felt so good afterward that when the study ended, they bought electric bikes in hopes of even more activity. Baker suspects that the volume of exercise might explain why even the simple stretching added up to a health benefit. Participants were supposed to exercise without social support for an additional 6 months. Baker has not studied that data yet. In addition to the recent study, Baker is leading an even larger study of older adults to see if adding exercise to other steps, such as a healthy diet, brain games, and social activities, may reduce the risk of dementia. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Warren Harding. He was the 29th President of the United States. Harding was very different from the 28th President, Woodrow Wilson. Wilson supported change. Harding promised a return to normalcy. Wilson took steps to protect American workers. Harding often worked to protect business owners.
Wilson was slow in supporting voting rights for women and in accepting African-American people as equal to whites. Harding supported women's suffrage and civil rights for African-Americans. Yet both men were popular during their years in office. Today, however, historians usually think of Wilson as one of America's best presidents. But Harding is remembered as one of the worst. Warren Harding was the 8th president from the state of Ohio. His parents were both doctors. Harding spoke about having a happy childhood, growing up on a farm with his brothers and sisters. Some of his favorite early activities were performing in a band and working on his college newspaper. Later, Harding, along with two friends, bought a newspaper. It became successful for several reasons. Harding was kind to his employees and shared the company's profits with them. He also tried not to publish stories that criticized politicians or politics from any party. Finally, he married a woman who had an excellent head for business. Florence Kling Harding led the newspaper's circulation department. She also helped to direct her husband's political career. In time, Warren Harding became a state senator, a lieutenant governor of Ohio, and then a member of the U.S. Senate. He especially liked being a senator, and many of the other lawmakers liked him. One reason is because Harding rarely took a controversial position on any issue. Instead, he accepted most of the ideas of the Republican Party. He was also good-looking and had an excellent speaking voice. These qualities helped earn him the Republican presidential nomination in 1920. A few months later, he easily won the national election. President Harding took office shortly after World War I ended. He promised to make Americans feel calm again and also improve the nation's prosperity. Two of Harding's goals were to support business and to limit immigration. He succeeded on both issues. His administration reduced taxes for big businesses and wealthy people. It also increased tariffs, taxes on foreign imports. And the Harding administration put in place new rules on immigration. The rules made it easier for immigrants from Northern Europe to enter the country, but harder for immigrants from Russia, Eastern, and Central Europe. Harding also took steps to improve the effectiveness of the federal government. But his administration is remembered mostly for its problems. At the beginning of his term, Harding reportedly told friends that the job of being president was too much for him. He appeared to want to do well, and he worked hard, but he turned over most of the responsibility to his friends in the cabinet. A few were very able, but some were dishonest. They abused their positions to gain wealth for themselves and their families. One of the most famous examples of corruption during Harding's administration is known as the Teapot Dome scandal. The name Teapot Dome comes from a rock in the state of Wyoming. the rock looked like a teapot. Scientists correctly believed that oil could be found in the ground underneath it. At the time, the U.S. Navy depended on oil to fuel its ships. So the federal government claimed the land in case the Navy needed to use the oil in an emergency. But a cabinet official who was a friend of Harding took control of the land. He gave a private company permission to search for oil on it in exchange for a large amount of money. Some lawmakers became suspicious, so they opened an investigation. In time, lawyers proved the act of corruption. Harding's friend was the first person to be found guilty of a crime while serving as a cabinet official. But President Harding did not live to see his friend go to jail. The investigation was just beginning when Harding took a trip to the West Coast to campaign for his policies. Some say that Harding was also trying to escape the problems in his administration. He reportedly told one reporter that worrying about what his friends were doing kept him awake at nights. During the trip, Harding showed signs of not being in good health. Doctors thought he could have food poisoning or pneumonia. He was taken to a hotel in San Francisco, California. For a day, he appeared to be feeling better. He was sitting up in bed, and then suddenly his body shook and collapsed. He died instantly. Reports at the time differed on the cause of Harding's death. Some even said that his wife poisoned the president to protect him from being punished for the wrongdoing in his administration. But most historians think that he had long suffered from heart failure and was struck by a heart attack. He was 57. Millions of Americans mourned over Warren Harding's death. They stood beside railroad tracks as his body traveled from California back to Washington, D.C. The following year, Florence Harding also died. She and her husband are buried together under a grand memorial in their hometown in Ohio. But in the years after his death, Harding's public image worsened. More corruption scandals in his administration came to light, and some historians have criticized him for not having a clear idea about how he wanted to lead the country. In 1927, a woman published a book saying she had a long but secret relationship with Harding, both before and during his presidency. She also said he was the father of her daughter. Genetic testing has confirmed her claim. More than 30 years after her book was published, a lawyer discovered love letters from Harding to a different woman. They confirmed that he had a long romantic affair with the wife of one of his friends. Harding had also been married at the time. These reports, as well as the corruption during his administration, damaged Harding's public image. But he also seemed to know that he would not be remembered as one of the best occupants of the White House. Instead, he tried to be likable and modest. He called himself a man of limited talents who was not fit for the office of president. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.